so it was about a year after Jedi came out that I got a call that from Lucasfilm that they were looking for people to write on cartoons based on the characters. So I'd been writing cartoons for a few years, and I'd been working for most of the studios in Los Angeles, all of whom aren't there anymore, like Hanna-Barbera, Filmation, Ruby Spears, a bunch of places like that. And I had heard that they were looking for writers to work on the Star Wars shows and ideally to relocate to the Bay Area. And I was from San Francisco, from the area, and I thought, oh, it'd be fun to go home for a while and work for these guys and see what George Lucas is really all about and all stuff like that. He's not making Star Wars anymore, but he might be making some other stuff. So what happened was I submitted some of my writing with a tape of one of my finished cartoon episodes, and the people up there liked it. The producer, Mickey Herman, liked it a lot, and she said, I really like, you know, the script worked really well, and the way it translated to the finished cartoon was really great, and we'd like to talk to you seriously. So I went in and talked to her. I was a dyed-in-the-wool Star Wars fan. I knew all the characters backwards and forwards, and so very soon after that, I got to go up to Marin County, meet with George Lucas, and talk to him about Ewoks and droids. I got to say, George Lucas was the best boss ever. I mean, he really was. I can't speak to what it's been since 1989, but while I was there from 84 to 89, it was just terrific. And it was a great environment to work in. He was a great guy to work for. If you needed him, he was there as a resource, but he kind of explained, like, if you've got the job working here, you kind of know what you have to do, so you shouldn't really need me. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm here if you need me. So we made a point never to bother him with trivia. You know, if there was something big, you know, we would, you know, let him know. But usually we kept the production going pretty steadily, and we did some development after Ewoks and Droids ended to do some other animated shows that never got on the air. But, you know, he encouraged us to at least stay, you know, for a couple of years, just develop ideas and come up with new animation because he really wanted to work into that, you know, go into that realm. And so he really did foster an environment of creativity, because at the same time, you had the games division coming up with things like Maniac Mansion, and you had Pixar starting up. And occasionally I would go over and I'd watch John Lasseter, and his team making short cartoons. And I'd sit there watching them render these, like, at that point, they were almost like amorphous shapes, you know, like a, mm-hmm. And I would say, man, this is like watching Steamboat Willie or Laugh-O-Grams or something, because you knew that it was, they would crack it within a matter of months, and they would be making, each short they made was going to be better and better looking. And when they got spun off into their own entity, then they really went to town, and, you know, it became what it is then. But it was such a great environment to work in, and so he really did foster that creativity, and also, you know, all the design Carrie put into the place. It was beautiful. The tech building, the main house. I'd go down there to use the library or something, and there'd always be a new piece of artwork going up, and Maxfield Parrish or Wyeth or something. It was great to see a creative environment like that. And every Thanksgiving they would have this big giveaway where they would. Every employee would get a turkey. You know, they had a barn there, and then there's a local distributor called Willie Bird Turkeys. And a day or two before Thanksgiving, everybody would go line up, and there'd be a gift, you know, nice turkey to take home. And it was just like little things like that were just nice. It wasn't like he was always running around, you know, clapping you on the back or say, hey, how are you? He didn't need to do it. He just sort of made it a nice place to work.
It was like Silicon Valley culture before there was such a thing as, like, Google Silicon Valley culture. It was like the punk rock version of the studio system.
Yeah. It's sort of like working for a benevolent version of Scrooge McDuck. I mean, you know, he was kind of a you know, honest, hardworking guy. And I mean, that's my impression of George Lucas. And the fact that he wasn't around, the fact that he wasn't, you know, like the big buddy or big pal, it was, you know, spoke to his character that he just trusted you to do a job. There was nothing very phony or
micromanaging.
No, not really. I mean, if there was a situation that needed, you know, like, this is not coming together, or this episode is not looking great, you know, are you available to look at it? Maybe suggest some edits or some cuts. he would come in and you'd get his full attention, and then he'd go back and, you know, and mm-hmm. and then do what he was doing, which at that point was producing other people's movies. He was just sort of enjoying being an executive producer on things like Willow and Tucker and Howard the Duck and things like that. So, and I think he was thinking about just doing small movies again at that point, and just taking some time off to be a dad, just enjoy life.
And you were working at Lucas during the Indiana Jones era.
Yeah, they were just gearing. I was there between indies, between Temple of Doom and Last Crusade. Mm-hmm. So when I was leaving, they were gearing up to do Last Crusade.
That must have been pretty awesome to see how that sausage was made.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see much of it. I just knew that by the time I left, I knew that it was going into production and they had settled on a script. I do remember George being very involved with the script and hearing about different draft after different draft, and it was coming together gradually. Like, these things take a long time to get going. I was privileged one day to look at the book, which was a book of research that he had put together of great story ideas for Indiana Jones and treasures and everything and mythology and everything. And to know that this was something that he had put together with the library researchers and had come up with all these great, you know, ideas for stories and locations where they could put Indy. And I got to flip through them one day and I'm going like, oh, each page would make a great movie.
Let's just hold for a second.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Oh, that's
I'm not going to tell you what was on those pages.
No,
but
don't.
Did the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, that was a little bit later.
That was a little bit later. Okay. That was a little bit later. Okay. But I was actually working for Steven Spielberg on Tiny Toons when that happened. But here's the other.
Wait, never heard of him.
He's a director. Yeah, did some movie about a fish. Here's the other great thing about working at Skywalker.
It's no Nemo.
No, right. at that time, you could check out pretty much anything you wanted from the art archives and decorate your office with that. So if there was a favorite Ralph McQuarrie painting, you could go and sign it out. You know, it's like, can I get the one of, what did I have? I had like a shot of them all running for the X-Wings or something, a Yavin base, I think, or a couple of others. And you just sign it out. Okay, I'm going to take Yavin base. I'm going to hang it on my wall. It's there, you know, and they would know where it was. And it would have been low to even, because they were so generous with that, to even think of taking a souvenir. You mm-hmm. didn't, you wouldn't yeah. want to do it, because why? They're trusting you with this. And with that trust came a great feeling of propriety, that you wanted to preserve things as they were. I had the fertility idol on my desk for a while. My office used to be Ian Bryce's old office, and he just sort of left it there. And one day I'm sitting there just sort of tossing it in the air, and somebody came back, can we get that back? And it's like, yeah, here it is. And but
how many times did you pretend to exchange it with like,
every
a sandwich?
Day, every
just like
day,
sandwich.
Every day.
They're like, Paul hasn't turned in anything today. What's he doing? Oh, he's doing the sand thing. Oh my god.
No late fees, right? You just got to keep it as long as you wanted in your office.
Yeah, when then they knew where it was, and then you just said, you know, by the time when your job was up, it's like you either gave it back or you told somebody in archives and they came and picked it up. But one of the Raiders mummy cases was in our office, and I had a really nice Drew Struzan indie painting in there that was not one of the ones used, but it was one of the ones. I said, can I just borrow? It was like a preliminary, and can
just
I have this?
Fan you all that in those nerd sweats.
But it's like it's yours for a while, and you got to have it and then give it back and
appreciate it.
Yeah, it was incredibly generous, but it was sort of the spirit at the time that it was family without being goopy about it. You know, you just sort of, you know, like, oh yeah, you wanted to take care of the stuff and you wanted to see it well preserved, and there was a feeling of pride that you were allowed to, you know.
Are there any Lucas collectibles that you do have that you're particularly proud of?
Well, actually, there was a piece of artwork done by the Nelvana crew from Ewoks that I had in my office. And then when I left, I sent it to archives. I said, you want this? And then it came back and says, George said you can have it. So he gave it to me. So it's like, oh, really? Thank you. That's this nice painting. The Nelvana artist had done of Wicket kind of staring in the water, and the red Ewok, Asha, is kind of looking at him from the tree. And it was... That, we did that as like one of the, we knew we were going to do that story. So that was one of the ones we did in presentation art. So I had that. He said, yeah, he said, you can have it. So it's like, oh, thank you. So that was like the big thing. And, you know, occasionally you get little thing, but you didn't want to take souvenirs really. Cause it's like, it belongs here.
Yeah.
It belongs in a museum. But again, you know, toys would come by, like the Kenner toys would come in, they'd drop a box of them off, so you get to take those home occasionally. And at Christmas, they would always give you a gift. And so there would always be like, some years it was like an ILM watch with the magician on it, or a blanket with Lucasfilm on it, or some, you know, action figure or toy. It was really nice. Oh, one birthday, I got to go to the toy bay, and my producer said...
The what?
The toy bay. It's like...
Hold on, George said you can go to the toy bay.
Stop.
What is a toy bay? Describe the toy bay. How does one get into the toy bay? Does the toy bay still exist?
How long does it take to drive there?
Well, for my 25th birthday, I got to go to the toy bay. And because I was working there, and they said, yeah, your present is you get to go to the toy bay. The toy bay was on the ranch, and it was a... or was it Kerner? It was a Kerner. And it was a big warehouse where they had everything connected to Star Wars. So every product that was ever made with Star Wars, it was like Noah's Ark, is housed in there. So they said, you can go to the toy bay for, you know, give you 3 minutes in the toy bay.
Whatever you get to leave the toy bay with... whatever you could grab
like
in 3 minutes,
suite. Or like
the supermarket suite.
It's supermarket suite
supermarket suite. It was like you are in the temple going in there. What can I load up on? And but because it was like a real privilege, I just went in and I was like, okay, large size IG-88, okay, Leia with a combable hair. Yep, I'm done. Just took those two.
Oh my gosh.
What would you get if you go in the toy bay?
I would get a Minton box Bespin Luke from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Or a Falcon, a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even be able to handle it. I would freak out.
It was it was great. It was so nice that I just felt like I know these two are kind of collectible items, but I kind of want them, and I'm just going to hold it to these. So, IG-88, Princess Leia with a combable hair.
What would you get?
That was it.
What would I get? I would get the remote control, I don't know the name right now, the Sandcrawler.
Oh, yeah.
It's a memory I have of when my brother first brought his toys down for me to play with was that Sandcrawler. And then I'd have to go with... I'd have to go with a Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That is the ship to end all ships.
Yep. Get a Vlix on the card.
Ooh.
Vlix from Droids, the henchman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It can't be had. Can't be had.
Have you heard of this thing? We're not super big into vintage figures, but have you heard of this thing that's very popular?
What's that?
With the old droid C-3POs? Is apparently... because they were made all over the world.
Yeah.
The metal vacked ones, you can drop them into a chemical, which clearly is like blasphemy to take that metal vac off. But the crazy part is they have all sorts of wacky colors.
Really?
So you can find like a purple arm, lime green body.
Yes.
Like the plastics they use don't match. So it's kind of this like become this fun bootleggy thing to do if you've got a real beater C-3PO is you drop it into this chemical and you see what wacky plastic combinations there are. We're not encouraging that you damage vintage Star Wars figures.
Is that how we got the red arm? And
he's like, they dropped me into it. Some collector picked me out and ruined me, and now I got this red arm.
Yeah. No, I hadn't heard that. I mean, it's I collected everything for a long time, and I had all the action figures that came out, and I remember even when the first movie came out, I went out and bought as many as I could because they were just so neat, even though they were weird, like the lightsaber came out of their arm or something.
Noodle saber.
Yeah.
Telescoping one.
Yeah. It was just weird, but that stuff was really great. I liked the large size figures, the large size Boba Fett and Vader and all those guys.
I read your graphic novel Dark Knight, by the way, which was...
thank
incredible.
You.
Yes. I absolutely loved it. And you talk a lot about the role collectibles played in your life, how sort of like as a child they were they were kind of like your armor. They sure. were like your these yeah. characters were like what you came in to absorb yeah. your life. What did it mean to you to start working on properties where you could gift kids with those types of things?
Like, oh yeah, it was great. I mean, it was like when the Ewok figures came out, I gave every kid, you know, a set of those. I mean, they knew Wicket and from the movie, they didn't really know the other ones, and the Duloks. You know, Bob Caro and I came up with you know, those guys. And so, like, here's King Gorniche, you know, here's Lady Urga, you know. And it's like, what are these? And it's like, well, these
we
are...
will do a King Gorniche action figure yeah. pin. Like, we will
oh,
do
oh, yeah.
Let's do a King Gorniche. It's going to happen.
King Gorniche, man. I like that guy. He's a good stumble bum villain, you know. They were supposed to be just kind of like clowns. But I always thought he was a lot of fun. Those three Duloks were, like, the core Duloks were a lot of fun to write and fun to have.
What's one of the most fulfilling moments you've had in your life as a creative? Is it going to cons and seeing people dressed as Harley Quinn? Is it just knowing that there are people out there that enjoy the work, or is it just doing the work?
It's doing the work.
Yeah.
It's getting the opportunity to continue doing the work, is whether it's on my own stuff or somebody else. If somebody calls me and says, you know, you want to write a story or you want to come in and pitch something, and you know, there's always that new challenge and everything. It's a lot of fun to just keep doing it. When I'm in the middle of doing it, I hate it the most, because it's like fighting like this 30-foot-long anaconda that's killing you. Every story is like an anaconda. It's just wrapping itself around you and smothering you, and you just have to kind of just squeeze its head until it lets go, and then once it lets go, that means I'm done with the story. But mm-hmm. in the middle of it, it's like wrestling a monster. But doing that said, it's fun. Once the story takes shape and you're kind of going through it, and when it's done and you're happy with it, that's a great moment. And so, you know, you just, for me personally, I just, that's the high, is once I'm done and I can kind of walk away from it, put it on a shelf, and then look forward to something else, something mm-hmm. new to do. That's the most satisfying. And, you know, when somebody will come up to me and say, I liked something you wrote, or they, you know, whether it's a Batman episode or a book or Dark Knight or something like that, it always means a lot. So,
which yeah. Of all your characters, is there one in particular that you're like, I love sitting down with this character and making them come to life? Is it the Joker?
Joker's awfully good. Harley's awfully good. Some of my characters, like Jingle Bell, are awfully good. You know, sometimes I'll go years without writing a Jingle Bell story. You know, she's a Christmas character of mine. But when I've got a good one, I just love it, you know, because mm-hmm. it's, like, very close to mine, Boo and Hiss. I'm yeah. loving like that. You know, so I can't say I have a favorite character or favorite story. It's whatever I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah.
Is always the next one is going to be the favorite one. So,
do you ever see yourself contributing again to the Star Wars universe?
That is up to other folks. And, you know, it's like if it happens, it happens. I'm always happy when it comes my way. And it's always usually a surprise. Like the last time was writing the story for from a different point of view, and it was just fun to do. So I just look upon the Star Wars universe as something I just drift into every once in a while. And when I find myself there, I always have fun. But I never stay too long. You know, mm-hmm. it's I did my tour of duty for 4 years there, and I had a lot of fun. And when it comes back, it always feels like home. And then I'm off to something else again. But I, you know, I love it. If I felt like I couldn't contribute anything to it, if I felt like the characters were not for me, or the story was too dry, or it was just, I felt I was a bad match, I wouldn't do it. But, you know, I usually like everything connected with Star Wars to some degree or another.
Now, you've spoken a little bit about how you wrote the Boba Fett story from a certain point of view.
Uh huh.
Did they let you pick what character you wanted to write?
Yep. And I said, I want Boba Fett. And they said, he wasn't in the movie. I said, yeah, he was. Special edition. They go, oh, yeah, he was.
It's canon, remember?
Yeah. And it's like, well, what's your take on it? It's like, well, it's like Kevin Smith in Clerks. I'm not supposed to be here today, you know? It's like Dante in the movie. It's like, I wasn't supposed to work today, and I got called in. And they said, all right, that's funny. So it's like, he wasn't supposed to be here. Jabba said, I got to shake down some creep. It's like, can you be there? Docking Bay 94. I guess I'll be there. Who is it? Oh, Solo? Jesus Christ. Biggest loser in the galaxy. Come on.
What a phony.
God, job, I'm charging you double for this. So, I mean, just like that. I mean, it's almost like a stand-up routine. You just kind of write it in your head, and you just sort of freeform it. I don't care if it's canon or not. It just was just amusing. And so something like that, when you can put yourself in the heads of these characters, or it's sort of fun. I thought, you know, I'll do that. I got 3 pages out of that.
What are you looking, if you had to hope for something that would happen in The Last Jedi, the upcoming Star Wars movie, what's something you're like, oh man, I really want to see them go there with this story?
I want to see them kick Kylo Ren's ass. I want to see them kick it across the galaxy from one end to another. I want to see that little squirt cry for bumping off Solo. And yeah.
As a storyteller.
Yeah.
Do you think that after him doing what he did to Solo, do you think there's any way that that character can be redeemed in the course of the next 2 movies?
Not unless it involves an incredible amount of self-sacrifice, almost like a martyrdom of, like, I'm killing myself mm-hmm. for the greater good, like Vader or something like that. That character is pretty irredeemable, and I don't see ever really being a big Kylo booster. I don't think he could ever really make that situation
right. You don't think the Resistance is going to be like, oh, you're good now. Come back. Great.
No, I mean, like, you know, he's not going to get out of this by just saying, you know, giving him a card.
My bad. I'm sorry.
I killed your son. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a shout out to my friend Taron Killam, who wrote the most brilliant, that brilliant sketch on SNL.
Yes.
That was my favorite thing connecting with A New Hope was that Kylo Ren is the boss sketch. Really brilliant. It was brilliant. But, you know, he could redeem himself if he does some, you know, tremendous act of good, but it's
he's got to die doing it.
He's got to die doing it. You know, it's like, hey, whatever he's done, that's the one thing about the Star Wars, about whatever he did and whatever he came to blows with Luke in the past, is they can't really show that unless they do a lot of digital trickery to, you know, erase 20 years and show what happened. So a lot of what he did is discussed rather than seen. But still, he's blown up planets. He's killing his guys right and left. He's killed his dad. It's pretty nasty.
Well, always, too, when I think about Kylo and whether or not he can be redeemed, I always think about what would it say Vader doesn't die
right.
in Return of the Jedi. Because there's a lot of folks that really do think Kylo can be redeemed. And I'm curious to see if they can convince me of that and pull it off. But I always go, let's say Vader throws Palpatine off. He doesn't die. And it's like, I don't think he's having a catch with Luke after that. Vader's probably like, listen, I'm a monstrous human. Thank you for showing me there's something good. I'm going to go off here and never be seen
again. You
got
5 minutes to get your butt out of here.
Yeah, and, like, he's not going to, like, go down with Luke and be like, Leia,
no,
let's be buddies now. And I think that's one of the things we forget, right? Especially with Kylo.
Yeah.
Is we have 2 movies, and this is the second movie. This is the one where we thought killing Han was bad.
Yeah,
he's got to double down. I mean, we're in the second one. He's going to do some terrible shit in this movie.
We know that Leia's not going to be in the third one for a variety of reasons. But I'm not even going to speculate what happens there. But it's like it would be. I don't know. I'm more interested in seeing what happens with Luke in this one and see what his journey
grumpy
is.
Grumpy Luke.
Grumpy Luke.
Your boy, Mark. Grumpy Luke.
My boy, Luke. Yeah, he's a... It's going to be... Oh, I sent him... I asked him for a quote for A Dark Knight, and he said, oh, yeah, send it to me. So I sent it to him while he was in England. And the next day, I get an email back from him, and it's like, I have you to thank and to blame for... blowing all my cues today because I stayed up all night reading your damn book, which is brilliant. And I mean, he really loved it.
Aww.
But the next day he was absolutely useless on the set because I was just going to flip through a page or two and I sat there reading the entire thing and I stayed up too late the next day. So I wrote a script page for him. I said, here's your makeup script page. Rey, the way of the forces. Oh, I'm sorry, Daisy. I read this damn comic book. Can we go again?
He's like, I wish we'd go back to The Force Awakens where I didn't say anything.
Yeah. He's sitting in his hotel room all, you know, for 6 months while they're filming a movie.
I, you know, actually, I saw him like a few months before he went off to start shooting, and he's like in weight training, and he's eating nothing. Misty and I went to his house, and it's like, do you want to go to dinner? And he says, no, we can't go out. We'll have some plain tuna fish here because I'm just doing protein and everything. And now I've got a, he was just getting ready to work with J.J. Abrams. And so he was just starting to start the process. And then it was months of the process and then actually filming. And then it's like, I didn't even get to say anything. I just stood there.
It was like a great trick. Like, we need to give Mark like 4 solid years to get back into Luke shape. So yeah. Let's just... He won't even talk.
He was in good shape before. I mean, yeah. He could have done it. I mean, you know, and he's wearing a caftan, yeah. You know?
Meanwhile, he's hanging out in Ireland going, I can't even have a goddamn Guinness.
No, no. It's like, I don't know. Those porgs are starting to look pretty good.
Protein.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just protein. Paul, thank you so much for throwing a little bonus content in for the show.
Oh, yeah. Happy
Man,
to do it.
Man, we are just so thrilled to have you here, and... You've done so many fantastic things for the Star Wars universe.
Thank you.
Something that has inspired us to get super sweaty in an office. So thank you. And I know all the fans out there, thank you for what you've contributed.
I mean, like I said, I love Star Wars. I love working there. Like the folks there currently. It's always a great place to find myself in occasionally. So, yeah, it's great.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this little bonus content. You guys, check out Paul on social media. The links are in the show notes. And remember, may the Force be with you.
What's up, guys? I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar. Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, that evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with little baby shit like that.